117. The Valle de los Caídos between Madrid and Segovia is the fascist monument that the dictator Franco had built after his victory to honor the fallen Falanges and to serve as his future mausoleum. Built is the wrong word. He let it be driven into a granite cliff by slave and forced labor, a space twice the size of the Notre Dame in Paris, one of the largest mausoleums in the world, and most certainly a spiritual one, too, a mine in the form of a cathedral. At the end of the gigantic cavern, in a papally acknowledged basilica, Franco's grave is today located. Upon this grave, even now, 30 years after the end of the fascist dictatorship, fresh flowers are laid daily by the father of the adjacent cloister, and daily masses are read for the dead dictator. Before my eyes, a father performed the transubstantiation, raised the chalice as if he wanted to toast the dictator, and drank the blood of Christ. Since the 1st of January, 28, the glorification of Franco has been prohibited in Spain, but not visits to his mausoleum or the reading of mass before his grave. Robert Manass, Eutopia, 2009.
118, Book 6, Fatal Obstacles, in which women's autonomy confronts a variety of patriarchal claims to their well-being using contemporary and archaic rationalizations.
119. Gayatri Spivak, Can the Subaltern Speak? 1984. Between patriarchy and imperialism, subject constitution and object formation, the figure of the woman disappears, not into a pristine nothingness, but into a violent shuttling, which is a displaced figuration of the third world woman caught between tradition and modernity. Ece Temelkaram, Turkey, The Insane and the Melancholy, 2016. Issues of westernization and modernity, since the very beginning, have been made synonymous with putting women on display and dressing and undressing them.
120. To dissolve the identity of the flaneur is to begin to dismantle one of the central orthodoxies of recent accounts of modernity. It reopens the question of who occupied the streets of the 19th century city and of the experience of that occupation. This allows a re-examination of the presence of all kinds of women on the city streets. Nor were these women necessarily passive victims of a voracious male gaze, but they can be imagined as women who enjoyed and participated in the ocular economy of the city. Linda Need, Victorian Babylon, 2000.
121. I do not desire slavery in any form, but I do want the duty of labour imposed by that great law of nature that is embodied in our status. And I do not think the black should escape it through the leniency of the law and the veritable slavery he imposes on the women. Fred Andrade, Portuguese colonial governor of Mozambique, 1907.
122. African women were a great scandal and fascination to Europeans of the 18th century, and they were invariably presented, not only by the voyage account authors, but by learned Enlightenment writers, as at once absolutely powerless slaves to their husbands in the domain of African family life, and as overpowerful intruders in the domain of political power.
123. The colonial fear of the communal dancing of the colonised homed in on women and took the form of ridicule. The women were entirely naked, thus the effect of a female crowd bounding madly about as musical enthusiasts. Even the babies were brought out to dance, and these infants were jolted about without the slightest consideration for the weaknesses of the necks by their infatuated mothers. As usual amongst the tribes in Central Africa, the old women were even more determined dancers than the young girls. Several old Venuses were making themselves extremely ridiculous, as they sometimes do when attempting the allurement of younger days. J. W. Buell, The World's Wonders, as seen by the great tropical and polar explorers, 1884. Such patriarchal disgust was inherently elitist, yet it's even more fun to see the old women who can scarcely carry their weight of years and look like corpses that seem to have risen from the dead, still in heat, looking for a mate. They are forever smearing their faces with makeup and taking tweezers to their pubic hair, exposing their sagging, withered breasts and trying to arouse failing desire, while they drink, dance amongst girls, and scribble their love letters. Erasmus, cited in Silvia Federici, Caliban and the Witch, 2004. In 1929, a group of Igbo women gathered in the Nigerian city of Agba to protest the tax policies of the British colonial administration. As their weapons, they used their own naked bodies. This event, for many, marked the beginning of modern Nigerian women's movement and the symbol of an unclothed female body as a tool of protest.
124. Tijuana, on the Mexican side of the border from El Paso, Texas, is the site of the first maquiladora factories, mostly USA-owned. In the early 1960s, a border industrialization program encouraged foreign investment for the production of clothing or assembling electronic components, and employing mostly young women in maquiladora factories. Many had migrated from the interior. There was a pervasive culture of bullying by mostly male supervisors, while in the 1980s and 90s the local media presented the women as oversexed libertines dressing provocatively. This coincided with almost weekly murder and sexual torture of factory working women since 1993, and a culture of impunity for the killers, with evidence lost or botched by the police. Traditional machismo was nevertheless blamed, but the effect of the killings was to increase docility, producing fear in the maquiladora. Chan Sunok, They Are Not Machines, 2003. The ever-present influence of Confucianism pervaded the whole work arena, and the stamp of paternalism and patriarchy translated, almost without modification, from the traditional agrarian society that had developed over centuries. To the burgeoning industrial nation of the Park Chung-hee's Third Republic, Korean dictatorship, 1970s till 80s. The transposition of Confucian mores from agrarian to industrial actually magnified and exacerbated the effects of class difference and economic inequality. For what emerged in growing numbers from the hiatus of modernization was the class of the entrepreneur. Individuals and families who came to wield as much, if not a great deal more power over subordinates, as had the aristocratic Yangban class of yesteryear.
125. The veiling of women is the fatal obstacle to the Egyptians' attainment of that elevation of thought and character which should accompany the introduction of Western civilization. The Egyptians should be persuaded or forced to become civilized by disposing of the veil. These are the words of Lord Cromer, the British Consul General of Egypt, 1883 to 1906. On return to Britain, the same man headed the Men's League for opposing women's suffrage.
126. In 1996, the Turkish Cypriot British designer Hussein Çelayan launched his burqa show, for which he consequently received death threats. Down the catwalk came young women, the first of whom was naked except for a golden mask. For some Muslim women, it is common to wear the black body covering abaya, a cloak that can be worn with a niqab, the face veil that leaves only the eyes visible. The next model wore the niqab along with an abaya cut off just above the waist, exposing the model's sex. This continued till the final model appeared completely covered. In 2013, the relatively safe diesel advertising campaign featured women, including one in a makeshift denim niqab who was heavily tattooed. This provoked outrage on several levels. The absence of the human image in Islamic cultural representation means that dress should convey the Muslim's ideal image of himself or herself as Muslim, a norm that the tattoo transgressed, as did the use of denim, an iconic Western cloth.
128. Report of the Colonial British Provincial Commissionary for the Dar es Salaam District, 1924. The breakdown of the tribal custom and former control is responsible for a great lack of discipline. The women themselves have obtained freedom from the old salutary restraints without having built up any character of self-respect to fortify their own conduct, and the result is deplorable. Audrey C. Smock, Women's Education in Developing Countries, 1981. Colonial policies had a rather important influence on sex role definitions and opportunities for women. Christian missionaries and colonial administrators brought with them Victorian conceptions concerning the place of women in society. Generally, they did not appreciate the significance, contribution frequently made by women and their sense of independence.
129. In German colonial Togo, the push to grow cotton commercially brought black American cotton sharecroppers, a new form of slavery, to show the way. The German colonists' emphasis on the use of the plough fitted with the colonialist desire to reduce the power and autonomy of women as farmers and to make the patriarchal nuclear family into the norm. Now, in the 21st century, women's rights to land are diminishing throughout Africa. Privatisation, formal registration and titling are part of the process of expropriating women while giving new rights to men and multinational corporations. They lose land when it is no longer available through customary channels and are severely restricted in their financial and social ability to gain land through government or market routes. L. Muthoni Wanyeka, Women and Land in Africa, 2003.
130. One method of attacking women's and communal land rights has been via accusations of witchcraft. In Africa now, as in early capitalist Europe, when land enclosure created a class of vagabonds and of new superstitions, the targets have been mostly elderly women, seen as a superfluous nuisance. In 1585, a widow aged 65, Margaret Harkett, was hanged in London. She had picked a basket of pears in a neighbour's field without permission. Asked to return them, she flung them down in anger. Since then, no pears would grow in the field. She was struck by a bailiff who had caught her taking wood from the master's ground. The bailiff went mad. A gentleman told his servant to refuse her buttermilk, after which they were unable to make butter or cheese. In modern-day Kenya, there's a growing desire for land on its Indian Ocean coastline. Sadaka Muru, 100 years old, who owns 12 acres of now sought-after land in coastal Kilifi County, claimed she was told by her grandchildren that they would burn her alive after investors asked about purchasing it. In January 2016, she was dragged naked from her home in January by relatives who had turned up without notice and told neighbours they had caught her doing witchcraft. In Tanzania, as in 16th century Europe, it is poor and marginalised old women who tend to face such accusations.
131. A recent rediscovery in the Czech National Library is the personal library of Heinrich Himmler, containing 13,000 volumes on witchcraft and a mishmash of esoteric texts. This obsession did not prevent his ruthless techno-productionism as head of the wartime RFK, a think tank and data bank of demographic economics given the job of adjusting the ratio between productive and unproductive population groups with the rationale one pays for progress.
132. The identification of women with nature influences and seeks to justify the way women are treated in Western culture. It is ironic that moves towards a change of attitude to nature, for example, the environmental movement, seem to have led to a rephrasing of familiar dualities. In Western society, nature, seen variously as a wild force to be tamed, a female sexual force, and a mystical repository for everything which a male-dominated society has denied, has been identified with Earth. In this role, it has remained as female physical force, still mystified, still other. Lucy Goodson, Holy Trees and Other Ecological Surprises, 2010. Through their pedagogy and medicine, missionaries managed to make sexuality, particularly women's, not only a religious concern, but a secular one as well, one that needed to be regulated by the colonial state. To be more explicit, sex became an area that required legislation that would put individuals under colonial surveillance. The medical and socio-political project of managing births, children, and mothers' lives required that sexual morality itself be controlled by the state rather than by kin or clan groups.
133. Rounding up Algerians and bringing them to demonstrations of loyalty to France was not in itself an unusual act during the colonial era. But to unveil women at a well-choreographed ceremony added to the event a symbolic dimension that dramatised one constant feature of the Algerian occupation by France, its obsession with women. Marina Lazareg, The Eloquence of Silence, Algerian Women in Question, 1994. Ashkenazi Jewish women in Israel fear that the traditional nature of Mizrahi Arab Jewish women would bring down their own modernity and suggested with a missionary zeal that the state should intervene to prevent the cultural retardation of Mizrahi children by their families. Nala Abdo, Women in Israel, 2010.
134. In February 2015, Hayat Boumediene appeared in many newspapers in both a bikini and a burqa, with gun after being revealed as the girlfriend of Amedi Coulibaly, who had been shot dead by the police in Paris after he had killed shoppers in a Jewish supermarket in a coordinated terror attack. All Muslims are required to practice modesty, but how this is interpreted in clothing styles is not compulsory at all. It is left to the piety and taste of the individual. Modesty is not just about freedom from vanity and showiness. It is decency and moderation in speech, manner, dress, and total attitude and behavior towards life. Farhana, a 24-year-old sales assistant. Because of our recent military gains in much of Afghanistan, women are no longer imprisoned in their homes. The fight against terrorism is also a fight for the rights and dignity of women. Radio address by Laura Bush in 2001, in which civilized people throughout the world were invited to equate Taliban with the terrorists who impose their world on the rest of us.
135. When Namibia was German Southwest Africa, the declining number of life Herrera's births was a topic of medical interest throughout Southern Africa, The whites looked on as anxiously as they would have at an outbreak of rinderpest among the cattle. Some of the more rational men of medicine attributed to the Herero birth decline to a deficiency of vitamin E in the diet, others to poor chances of fertilization given by the peculiarly long and narrow uterus of Herero female. But underneath and all this reasonable talk, this scientific speculating, no white Afrikaner could quite put down the way it felt. Something sinister was moving out in the world. He was beginning to look at her faces, especially those of the women, lined beyond the thorn fences, and he knew, beyond logical proof, there was a tribal mind at work out there, and it had chosen to commit suicide. Thomas Pynchon, Gravity's Rainbow, 1973.
136. Such anxiety was in the colonialists' genes. In 16th century Nuremberg, the penalty for maternal infanticide was drowning. In 1580, the year in which the severed heads of three women convicted of maternal infanticide were nailed to the scaffold for public contemplation, the penalty was changed to beheading. Margaret L. King, Women of the Resistance, 1991. A relentless wave of suicide attempts amongst the Attawapiskat First Nation, the Northern Ontario community, Canada, forced leaders to declare a state of emergency in April 2016. More than 125 people attempted suicide in this community of 2,000 people since the autumn of 2015. The youngest was 9 years old and the oldest 71. In 2011, the same community declared a state of emergency due to a severe housing shortage. At the same time, the De Beers Mining Company pulled $392 million worth of diamonds out of their Victor Lake mines on lands taken from the Attawapiskat First Nation through an extension of Treaty 9 in 1930. For young First Nations women in Canada, the suicide rate is 21 times that of their non-Indigenous counterparts. In the USA, the rate amongst Native American women has almost doubled between 1999 and 2014.